It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Being a dad is great, but sometimes it can be hard to figure out how to connect with your teens, especially daughters. Outdoors is a great place to make it happen. Away from the distractions of your very different lives, you and your daughter can meet challenges together and really have time to reconnect. Of course, I'm talking from the dad perspective, but I've talked to enough young women about this to know they want to know their dads better too, and to feel that pride and sense of accomplishment as well as sharing time together. On today's show, we're going to listen in on two father-daughter relationships that had the benefit of some big adventures. In the first half, a father and daughter who rode motorcycles from Alaska to get to her freshman year of an East Coast college. And in the second half, a father and daughter from Wisconsin who came to spend summers in northern Alaska building and trekking, and who now have written a new book about it. Well, my guests for this part of the show are Lars and Zoe Danner, and they did a father-daughter adventure of an unusual type, which is that as Zoe was leaving for college, instead of just putting her on an airplane or even getting on an airplane with her, Lars and Zoe got on motorcycles and rode all the way from Anchorage to Chicago. I want to hear all about that because I'm really interested in deciding to do that and then sort of what the trip is like and then also negotiating that father-daughter relationship as you run into the different challenges. And it's also such an interesting time of your life as, from my perspective, as your kid is taking off and, unfurling her own wings, and also from the point of view of the kid of going in your direction. So thanks for being with us, Lars. And you're here in the studio in Anchorage.
Yes.
Yeah. And Zoe is sitting outdoors in the quad at Columbia University in Manhattan. Thanks for being with us, Zoe.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. And we've had Lars on the show before because he's a cyclist. He's done the Iditarod Trail Invitational and just came back from it a little while ago. Zoe is a senior at Columbia, also is only 18 years old. So finished school quickly and is finishing Columbia in 3 years, majoring in Russian and human rights, which all sounds pretty interesting all by itself. So Zoe, it sounds like this motorcycle trip was kind of your idea from what your dad's saying.
Yeah. I was finishing up my senior year. I was doing the AP Early Honors program. So I was already pretty independent. And I'd been doing a lot of motorcycling lately. Though at that time I didn't have a motorcycle. I had a little orange Vespa that I was riding all over the city.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And the idea just kind of popped into my head one day that I really enjoyed being outside, and I really enjoyed riding my little scooter, and that would be something that I'd really miss, transitioning into life in New York. So I broached the idea with my dad. Hey, what's some way that I could kind of continue this next year, and maybe bring that into that transition between these two parts of my life.
So you were you were at APU in Early Honors, which is the dual credit high school college program, and you were 16 at the time?
I was actually 15.
Wow.
I turned 16 the month after I graduated, yeah.
Okay. So Lars, what did you think about this idea the first time you heard it of doing something like that?
Well, Zoe is strong-willed, and when she gets an idea in her mind, it's hard to say no unless you have a good reason. And so she had seen me do a lot of motorcycle riding over the years, and as she mentioned, she had that Vespa. And so when she brought up the idea, I was a little bit nervous about it, but I said yes, and the more I thought about it, sort of the more excited I got. There was a lot of hard work to do to get ready for the trip. Zoe had a scooter license. She had to upgrade that to a motorcycle license, and there's a slightly different skill to ride a motorcycle than a scooter, and so she had to.
So the first time is taking off across the country. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the part of this that I think is really cool is as a parent, a lot of times teens are sort of separating themselves from you and they don't necessarily want to hang out from you. But here your daughter is saying, hey, do you want to go on this ride? Or is that the way it really worked out?
Well, that was what I thought. I thought this would be a wonderful father-daughter bonding experience, you know, that we'd be, you know, right next to each other on the road and, you know, taking breaks together and all that. And there was some of that. We certainly had, you know, dinner together every night and I think breakfast together every morning. But what happened, and it started fairly, you know, soon, I would say, in the ride, maybe the second day or third day, was that, you know, Zoe would go ahead. She would, you know, I'd always want an extra cup of coffee and she'd be ready to get on her motorcycle. And
Is it playing out the teen father-daughter dynamic? And sounds like, but it sounds like, Zoe, do you have the same perspective?
Yeah. You know, I definitely agree that, you know, I was super glad to have my dad there for the whole experience. And, he was glad to start each morning and, you know, have dinner each night with him. But yeah, definitely pretty early on, we did kind of like establish our own like patterns to the day, which was kind of initially the result of some technical difficulties. My dad's bike broke down, like the front wheel fell off, which was pretty scary, but he ended up having to spend like the whole day getting that sorted out, while I rode on. Which did kind of, you know, give me a lot of wiggle room to, like experience the highway on my own, which was a lot of fun, I think.
Well, I can imagine that would be part of the whole deal is like riding a motorcycle to the lower 48 when you're 16 years old, being the freedom of the open road and having your dad there as a backup is good, but also having some time by yourself is good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is, like riding a motorcycle is a pretty solitary experience in general. So it's not, you know, even if we had been riding together for most of the way, it's not as though we would have had a lot of like interaction
right.
while we were driving.
So did you have to learn, did you have to develop some skills before you hit the road? Because, it's definitely, as Lars said, it's bit different than riding a scooter, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a little bit of a steep learning curve learning how to drive the bike initially, because unlike a Vespa, you do have to learn how to shift gears and you gain a lot of that technical knowledge. But I think that before that point, I had already developed kind of the mentality that you need to drive safely when you're not in a cage-style vehicle. But, you know, there was a kind of this aspect of you being aware that... like you're a very small person on a very small bike surrounded by a bunch of very big cars that aren't necessarily paying attention to you, which I think was a little bit difficult for someone who at that time maybe thought that they were like the center of the world to realize.
Oh, you thought, but you don't think that anymore. So
I'd like to think I don't.
Well, once you go to the big city and go to a place like Columbia, you often get taken down a peg, but it sounds like you've kind of excelled there too, so maybe not. So Lars, were you nervous at all about this? It's kind of motorcycle can be kind of a scary contraption when you think about your kid zooming off.
Yeah, I was nervous, and one of the things we did, or at least that I recommended, and we wound up doing was we started the trip by going down to Whittier, so we rode from Anchorage south. Rather than getting on the Glen and going past the Matanuska Glacier. And the reason for that is that section of highway for an experienced motorcyclist can be a lot of fun, but it's very, very curvy and there's very...
a lot of steep grades going up there on the Glen from Palmer to Glen Ellen, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so my thought was that we could start off with a relatively short first day, really just 50 miles down to Whittier. Take a ferry ride, and you know, give ourselves a little bit of time before we you know, started on a longer segment, and also make that first segment much easier, and so we did that, and things were going quite well until as Zoe points out, the front wheel on my bike started to not cooperate, and so that was actually our first night camping. We found some friendly folks south of Glen Allen who thought they could help us get a repair and offered to let us camp out in their driveway. So the first night camping was out in their driveway, which actually turned out to be, I thought, reasonably comfortable. But by early morning, Zoe was ready to go and hit the road, and my repairs were still in progress.
So you're kind of champing at the bit, huh, Zoe?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I thought that even though my dad had some technical difficulties, starting out easily like that, driving down to Whittier and then taking the ferry, had been really encouraging. You know, I hadn't really had any major setbacks and had a really good time, so I was pretty eager to just get going.
Yeah, so I have never done this, and I guess probably a lot of listeners haven't. What's the attraction to riding a motorcycle? I mean, what makes it sort of special? Dolores, do you want to take that first?
Well, for me, it's an opportunity to experience the landscape in a different way. You mentioned earlier, Charles, that I do a lot of bicycling and I also like to run. And those are sort of very slow ways you experience one area. It's very quiet. It's very peaceful. A car, on the other hand, you're very contained. You're very separated from your environment. But you do see sort of a lot of different things and can get to places in a car that you really couldn't get to quickly on foot or on a bike. And so what a motorcycle does is it sort of combines the best of both worlds, the connection with your environment, the ability to see sort of 360, although you have to be careful about that, as well as, sort of being able to cover the additional distance that you can in a motorized vehicle.
Yeah, it sounds like you really took to it right away, Zoe.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I also think that, really any way you travel that's not, a bike or a motorcycle or walking has this aspect of, observing the landscape through a window, and being kind of detached from it. You might as well just be, watching a movie of the landscape going by. Whereas when you're on a motorcycle, you're very tactilely involved with it. And you have to... when you go around a big turn, you have to, turn with your body. So it's very, you're very involved with it and you're experiencing it on a much more conscious level than I think that you would in any other method of transportation, which has its downsides too. If it's raining, you're going to be soaked and disgusting and cold.
Right.
If there's mosquitoes, they're going to...
splatter in your face.
They're going to splatter on you. If there's a smell, you're gonna get the full impact of it.
Right. That's all part of traveling, I guess. So what was the weather like on this trip? Was it pretty good?
If I recall correctly, it was raining most of the time, right? For the first few days anyway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was my recollection as well, that we were sort of, there was sort of a storm following us. And I don't think we really got past it until sort of the last town before the Alcan splits, and you can go south, or you can sort of continue south, southeast. And at that town, I think we finally got past the rain and didn't really have much until from there on out. Unfortunately, the best sort of section is. Well, actually, that's not true. The section of British Columbia is really quite.
There's a lot about beautiful about that drive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you went across the border by yourself, Zoe, after your dad's bike broke down, and you kind of got ahead of him. And I just think that's kind of cool to think of a 16-year-old heading off to college on a motorcycle going through the border by herself.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was actually one of the scariest parts for me because not only had I never traveled internationally before by myself. But there was also, a lot of construction along that area. So the road wasn't paved. So there was both that aspect of driving over a difficult road and, being anxious about whether I'd be able to get through the border by myself. In the end, it all turned out fine, but and left me probably, a little bit more confident in my, ability to travel by myself. But it was a little bit of a mental block just getting over the fact that I'd be crossing into Canada on a motorcycle on this really difficult section of road.
It sounds like you're a really adventurous person. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like, even if this was maybe not the easiest idea, like, I definitely never had, I never for a moment thought of not doing it.
What do you think, Lars? Is that adventurous? Would that be an adjective you'd use for your daughter?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's funny. She mentioned the border crossing and how it was a little anxiety producing for her, but it had a very, very happy ending. And that's that having gotten across the border, she drove through, Kewaunee Lake National Park, which is I think it's called Kewaunee National Park, mm-hmm. which is just a beautiful Canadian national park. And managed to get herself a cabin on the lake there, which she showed me pictures of that evening. So she'd found just a spectacular place to stay. I came through a little bit later in the evening and didn't see those cabins, and in fact found a nice turnoff on the highway to sleep at. If you've ever slept on a turnoff, you can certainly be comfortable. We had air mattresses and nice tents, but there's the noise of the highway and the RV campers with their generators going and that sort of thing. So it was a bit of a different experience between the two of us.
Yeah, and, sounds like your daughter had a better plan than you did. So, but we'll leave that. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about father-daughter adventures and. Lars and Zoe Danner are with me right now. Lars is here in the studio in Anchorage, and Zoe is on her cell phone sitting in the quad at Columbia University, where she's a senior in New York City and probably has lots of other adventures ahead. Well, I guess all three of us do, probably. Zoe probably more than either of us, though. So what was, I wonder about any wildlife or cool things you saw along the way. What were some of the best sightings or most interesting things you saw on your ride? Lars, do you want to take that first?
Well, Kewaunee National Park was just, spectacular. It's got to be, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And the wildlife there was spectacular. I must have seen, I don't know, four or five different groups of, those were goats, weren't they, Zoe, or were they sheep, do you recall?
Yeah, those were goats.
Yeah, and so that was really incredible. I mean, everybody's sort of amazed when they see, the doll sheep on the Seward Highway, but this was just like every turn it seemed like there was another family of these goats, and the road through there is spectacular for a motorcycle. One of the things that can be fun on a motorcycle is sort of curvy, not too fast roads. You get kind of a nice roller coaster is probably too extreme, but you get sort of a nice fun experience going through those curves
flowing back and forth.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. As long as you have good visibility, which we did through that park, it can be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, do you have anything to add on great sightings and great experiences along the way?
Yeah, I definitely also had a lot of fun on those really curvy roads. But as you begin driving down through the Yukon and then transition into British Columbia, they can get kind of dangerous because you're not the only person populating those roads. You're also sharing them with big herds of bison. So you'd come around a corner and then there would just be, 15 of these big shaggy bison staring at you with their big vacant eyes. Which is cute, but also a little bit annoying.
Wow. Yeah. That's worse than hitting a moose, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we were also, coming through in the spring. So, that's when all the bears are starting to wake up. I think one day I saw 11 little black bears playing by the side of the road. Which was, fun, but also a little confusing because, they have probably hundreds of square miles of forest and they choose to hang out by the highway.
Yeah, I don't know why they would do that. That seems strange.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not complaining. It was better than any zoo I've ever been to.
Yeah, and Lars, you said you saw a wolverine?
Yeah, I saw a wolverine, and I also saw a, what are those small cats?
Bobcat?
Lynx?
Yeah, links? I saw links, actually, which was just an incredible thing.
Yeah, that's so unusual. I wonder if you'd have seen that if you'd been in a car.
I don't know. I mean, the motorcycles are a bit louder than cars, yeah. And so sometimes they can scare off the wildlife. Mm-hmm. But that really didn't seem to be the case. I mean, I think, and I'm not sure why, but the population, wildlife populations down there through British Columbia, just seemed much, much more abundant than anything I'd seen,
yeah.
At least from the road system in Alaska. It was really kind mm-hmm. of staggering.
Cool.
Yeah,
it may be a function that it's more sparsely populated mm-hmm. there, whereas we have a lot of rural communities, and so there's some hunting and other activities yeah. that may sort of make the wildlife a bit more leery of the road
systems.
Could be.
So I think
correct
we're.
Me if I'm wrong, but I do remember seeing like a couple of forest fires the time when we were driving down there, which may have been what was driving it close, driving all the wildlife closer to the road.
Yeah, there was.
Do you remember that, or am I?
No, there were a bit of fires. I remember there was one. It wasn't anything bad, but there were some sections where there was some smoke. So that's true.
So we're maybe halfway through or the trip now on the way to Chicago, mm-hmm. and I'm just wondering if there's anything about your relationship that started to change, or anything about how you were. I mean, because this is such a big step for all of us as you're headed off to college. You're only 16 years old, which sort of adds another dimension to it. And here you're spending quite a bit of time together. Was there any chance to sort of talk about what was happening? Or is that, what was the emotional feeling during this ride? Zoe, do you want to take that one first?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like for me, the whole trip had a pretty exciting, hopeful turn. Tone, like, here I am going off to college. So I kind of started the trip out with this, general feeling like, oh, well, why does my dad have to come with me on this? Because, I know everything and don't really need him to keep me company. Uh-huh. And then, as the trip progressed more, there kind of, was this really, real sense of, oh, well, I don't really know that much about motorcycling at all. So my dad had to kind of teach me how to tighten the chain on my bike, show me how to, clean the windshield. So it was really nice, seeing that there were still all of these really useful things that he could teach me, even though I thought that, maybe I didn't need him anymore.
Oh, that's nice. Lars, did you have that feeling too?
Yeah.
Or what were you going through? I mean, what was your sort of emotional journey?
Well, I was, as I mentioned, I was very nervous at the start. I mean, Zoe had, like I said, had that small scooter, but really most of her experience on the scooter had been down in Girdwood, where there's, not a ton of traffic and, mm-hmm. and not a ton of people. She had used it just a little bit when she was at APU, and so she gotten, a bit more traffic-y situations. But I really, but in terms of riding a full-size motorcycle, she really just had about a week of experience when we started on this trip. But I think sort of again and again, with her, ability to, find places to stay and, make good decisions about gear and, find places for us to eat and really just be a partner in the trip. I thought it was a great sort of, way to start the next step in our relationship, which was, her sort of becoming, more independent and making the last, couple of steps that she needed to start into adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a little bit launching her, not quite, but you're sort of getting to gain more respect for her abilities as she goes along. And that's a really nice thing to be able to experience before she's completely out of your field of vision. So what was the next, when you're driving, one of the things about doing the highway is you get out of this beautiful, beautiful country, and then you get into some very flat, boring country for a while, right? And what was your route, and what was that like, the route you chose and what the riding was like? Zoe?
Oh, yeah, sure. So what we ended up doing was, and correct me if I'm wrong because I may be misremembering, was taking the Alcan down through Edmonton, at which point we transitioned to the Yellowhead. And took that through to the border, and then, popped out in North Dakota. And And it was like a big change from all of the roads that we'd experienced earlier, because it was really flat and really, really pretty hideous at some points, you know, because there would just be nothing for miles, which I think for me was a bad thing because it made me want to pay less attention. And, you know, at one point, I did end up having a little crash and, scraping my knee. So it definitely, you know, kind of made me like open my eyes and realize that I had to be, you know, vigilant at all, you know, points on the trip, not just the ones that interested me.
So I didn't know that there was such a thing as a little crash on a big road bicycle, road bike on an interstate. How do you manage that?
Well, for starters, I wasn't on a big road bike. I was on a little Yamaha V-Star 250,
which
is what most people buy for commuting, like within cities.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way too small of a bike for the job. I had to like stop and adjust the chain every 500 miles because, you know, it would just stretch out from driving so much. So what I ended up doing was, you know, I was coming around a little corner, which didn't happen very often on the Yellowhead. And there was a truck coming at me in my lane. And I didn't have time to, you know, to really brake. And there was a 4-inch drop onto the shoulder. So I just ended up going off onto the shoulder and flipping my bike, which was totally fine. You know, we got up with no problem. I had a little scrape on my knee and a little one on my elbow, but, you know, we got me cleaned up pretty easily. And fortuitously, the next town we came to had a little Yamaha dealership, which, you know, straightened out my brake, which I'd bent a little bit for free.
Nice.
Which was really fortuitous. And, yeah.
We're almost out of time, but I want to hear sort of some summary from both of you guys. It sounds like it was a really good trip, and would you do it again? And you know, and I'm also interested, Zoe, if you're still riding a motorcycle. I mean, do you have one there at school, or?
You know, I don't have one at school, but like I have one at home, and whenever I'm back in the summertime, I ride that almost exclusively.
Okay.
And my plan next year when I go to law school in California is to make a bike my main means of transportation there.
Cool. Are you going to ride?
Yeah,
you ride out there?
You know, that's not actually the plan right now because I'm going to Russia this summer, and then you know coming back almost immediately before the start of the semester.
Sounds exciting.
But you know, if anyone is ever like in a similar situation as me and my dad were, I would definitely recommend this trip to them hands down. You know, it's beautiful. You know, it provided me with a great opportunity to bond with my dad before I'm like really transitioning into my grown-up life.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible. I wouldn't have traded the experience for everything. Certainly not a boring plane ride.
Yeah. Lars, and what about you?
Yeah, it was a great experience for me too. It was an opportunity to really get to know Zoe better and on a deeper level. And I'm really grateful that she wanted to do it. And I think it brought us closer together.
You got other kids coming along? You might deliver them the same way?
Well, my son has taken after me in terms of bicycling. So we're looking at maybe a bicycle trip. I don't know that we could make it all the way down the Alaska Highway.
You have to allow a lot of time for that.
But we may do a little bit of a shorter bicycle trip that ends with him at college. So
cool.
We'll see how that goes.
Cool. Well, I want to thank both of you. This is really interesting. I appreciate your openness and what a great adventure. Lars Danner, who is with me here in the studio, a big cyclist, ITI competitor, and Zoe Danner, who is a senior at Columbia University, and sounds like she's off to a great continued academic career. Thanks to both of you for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was great to be on.
Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
My guests right now are coming to us from Wisconsin. They're in Madison or near Madison, a father and daughter, Jim and Aiden Campbell. And they have an Alaska connection because of some adventures they did together. Aiden is still in high school. She's just finishing up her senior year. Going back just a few years, they came up to help build a cabin and do a long trek through the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And now Jim has written a book about it under his byline, James Campbell, called Braving It, which is coming out right now from Random House Crown. And I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
And Aiden, I guess you're getting out of class today to be able to talk to us.
Yes, I am. So I guess I have to thank you again for that.
All right. So, Jim, tell us about how your... I know it was not that easy to decide to take Aiden to Alaska to build a cabin when she was 15 years old. Tell us about how that all came about.
Well, when I was writing my first book, which was called The Final Frontiersman, not to make a big book pitch, but that was a book about my cousin and his wife, Edna, and their daughters who live in the heart of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. They're hunter-trappers and Haimod, Edna Korth, and Rhonda and Kryn. And while I was writing that book, I made 5 trips to Alaska and lived with them off and on. And when I'd come back home, you know, I'd tell my stories, and people would listen dutifully, and some of them liked the stories. And the one person who was insatiable, who couldn't hear enough about Alaska, was my daughter, Aiden. And she said she made me promise when she was a little girl that I would one day take her to Alaska. And when she turned 14, she kind of started to turn on the heat and really insist that the time was coming, it was coming close when I had to take her to Alaska. So I started kind of contemplating the idea, and she just turned 15, and we were going to go up and do a month-long backpacking or river trip. And then my cousin Haimo called and asked if we would be willing, or I would be willing, to come up and build a cabin because his was in danger of being washed away by the river. And I said, sure, if I could bring my 15-year-old daughter. And he was very hesitant, and somehow I managed to convince him that she was capable of doing the work.
But then you also had to convince your wife, true?
Yeah, and I guess a little bit of myself, you know. I felt a real responsibility, obviously, taking her up there. And my wife had some definite reservations, though she spent a lot of time in the mountains and wilderness herself. She was worried, as many people from the lower 48 are, you know, from the outside, about a grizzly jumping out of every thicket. And so eventually I managed to convince her that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, so Aiden, tell me about having this dream of going to Alaska when you were younger. What was driving you there?
Well, I think it started definitely when my dad went to Alaska to write The Final Frontiersman, and I was very young at the time. And my dad kept on going off to this foreign place, and then he'd reappear a month later, and he'd bring back these great stories. And I just remember, you know, sitting on his lap and listening to him tell me about Haimo and Edna's life, which was so foreign to me at that time. And I think my father and my family as a whole really instilled in me a love for the outdoors from a very young age. I grew up paddling down the Wisconsin River, hiking on the Ice Age Trail, bathing in the creek across the road. And I loved that experience. But I always had dreams of a great big wilderness, like the Arctic Refuge.
Cool, cool. And were you part of this lobbying campaign to get to be allowed to go?
Yes, very much so, very much so. And especially when it came to my mom, because she was probably the most hesitant. She was very worried about me, but I told her, this is what I wanted to do. This is what I've wanted to do for a long time. This is my dream, essentially. And I'd also say that I was definitely had to convince my dad and get him to convince Haimo, because Haimo's initial reaction was, why would a teenage girl, why would she want to be in the Arctic Refuge? You know, what's here for her? But for me, it was something a lot more. I wanted a wilderness on that scale. So I did have to do a lot of convincing there.
Well, and cabin building is hard work. I mean, that's kind of jumping off the deep end a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I initially going in, I had this idea of what the wilderness experience was going to be like. And in literature, it's kind of portrayed as this both spiritual and intellectual experience. But I think they neglect the physical exhaustion of being in the wilderness and living or following this kind of lifestyle. I mean, everything is work up there, from getting your food to cooking to getting water to bathing. It was not easy. It was an extreme adjustment for me.
Yeah. Well, how were you so sure that she'd be able to make that adjustment, Jim?
Well, she'd always been a pretty determined kid. And I knew that it was a big dream of hers. But I think that, and I think Aiden would probably agree, for the first week or maybe two, she was pretty miserable. It was the worst bug season in the interior in decades. And we worked hard. Aiden was our official peeler, so she peeled all the logs with a draw knife. And, that was really hard work. And she was isolated. She had no connection to home, no connection to her friends, to her family. And she was busting her butt. We had a month to essentially finish the cabin. And she was, she sweat and it was dirty work. And then she'd have to wash up, in the Colleen River, which was bitterly cold. So it wasn't exactly how a 15-year-old girl wanted to spend her summer. But I knew deep down that she wouldn't fail, that she was up for it.
Well, and once you're in, right? I mean, you don't get to change your mind at that point.
No, I'm sure that there were, I know that there were times when she was longing to be anywhere else but Alaska, with anyone else but her dad. But she really rallied. I have to give her that.
Well, tell us about that, Aiden. How was that? Was the experience from your perspective like what your dad's saying?
Yeah, definitely. Initially, going in, I'd say it was really hard to make that adjustment. And I remember being in that clearing. I was about 50 yards from the cabin site, and I was peeling these 25-foot poles with the draw knife. And that was exhausting work, and I just had the bugs swarming me. And I was wearing my bear bells to, just in case, there are grizzlies in the area, and you hope that the bugs will keep them in the high mountains. But my dad had a rifle set up against the tree, and I just remember thinking, what am I doing here? I'm sweaty, I have these bugs around me, I have a gun there just in case some grizzly comes charging out of the woods, and my friends are on the beach, sunbathing or swimming in the ocean, something like that. I just remember thinking, how much longer do I have? When do I get out of this place?
Yeah, really. So what got you over the hump?
Well, I'd say for me it was definitely finding those moments that were really important and inspirational for me. I think the first time I really felt like I belonged, or I felt like I had a place out there or a love for the place, was when I took my first bath in the Colleen River. And the Colleen River is ice cold. It's freezing. But after 7 days peeling these poles, I smelled terrible. And so I told my dad and Haimo that I was going to bathe. And my dad was initially a little bit worried, but I said, I need this time to myself. So I went down there, and I stripped down, and I touched my toe into the river, and I thought, oh, this is cold. But I just decided I'm going to go for it. So I jumped in like a Missy Franklin from the blocks, and I hit the water, and there was just this shock. There was a shock to the whole system. But I remember feeling the water rushing past me, and I was under the sun, and I was finally clean, and it was a really rewarding experience. It just felt like a spiritual renewal, too, for me. And after that point, I started to have I started to get that feeling again when I was building the fire, when I was walking around the woods by myself, when I was just looking out over the wilderness, and you just realize what an amazing place you're in.
Yeah. Boy, that's such a good description of that moment that I think probably a lot of us have felt when you realize that, oh my gosh, this really is all worth it. And actually the hard part is what makes it so great. We're talking to James and Aidan Campbell. James is author of Braving It, a new book from Random House Crown, which talks about their adventures, their father-daughter adventures, three times coming to Alaska. They live in Wisconsin, where we're talking to them by phone. And it's a well-written and interesting book. I've had a chance to read part of it and was really happy to get to include them in our father-daughter show today on Outdoor Explorer. So, James, you must have seen a lot of growth in your daughter through this process. And I'm interested in that part of it and how you saw her developing and how you saw these hardships and accomplishments influencing her as she was growing up.
Yeah, well, the changes obviously were gradual, but you know, as a father, they certainly gave me great pride and great joy to see her grow more comfortable and more confident and more competent, and also confident enough to really, as she said before, to kind of, you know, experience the wonder of the place. And when I saw that happening, I knew that despite my reservations and my wife's reservations that, you know, we had done the right thing. And, you know, that was really meaningful, you know, for me as a father. And I think that's the kind of sums up the entire father experience, father daughter or father son experience, you know, kind of the joy and the pain, you know, of letting go. When I saw her blossom out there, I experienced enormous pride and enormous joy, but I knew in that same moment, you know, that she was moving on.
Were there any particular incidents or stories that sort of illustrates that when you saw that happening?
Yeah, well, after that first time she bathed in the river, when we first got there, I had a shotgun, and she'd go to the bushes to pee, and, you know, she made me stand sentry for fear of grizzly bears. But when she went to the river that first time, and she experienced what she was just talking about, she made it a ritual. And then that became, you know, every two or three days she went down there on her own, and she said, you know, Dad, don't come down. I don't need you. I'm happy and I'm content and I'm okay. And so that was when I saw on that first trip, when I saw that again, that this was an experience that was really important for her.
Yeah, so you finished that summer, and I don't know if there's anything else you want to fill in about that summer, but then you decided to go again. Bring us forward in the story.
Yeah, well, we came back, and we had toyed with the notion of perhaps going back, but when I knew we had to go back was when I could see that Aidan was really pretty discontented. She'd always loved Wisconsin. We have a little farm here and have some bees and chickens, and there's always work to do, but it's not the wilderness. And I could see that her experience in Alaska had changed her. And then one night, in September, Haimo called by sat phone, and he said, I only have a minute to talk. This is expensive. And he said something, and I blurted out, can we come back this winter? And he said, come on up anytime you want. We could use you, you know, out on the trap line. So with that message, we decided we were going to return.
So you went up in the wintertime.
Yeah, we went up from a month in winter, and on the trap line, and Aiden spent the majority of that time with Haimo's wife Edna, who's a Yupik Eskimo from St. Lawrence Island, though she has lived in the refuge now for about 35 years. But to see Aiden bond with Edna was really remarkable for me, and Aiden can talk much more about that.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that, Aiden. And also, I mean, that is a cross-cultural experience of the extreme, you know, to go from the Midwest to living a traditional lifestyle in the middle of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. I mean, that seems like it would be a little scary.
Yeah, I think it was an adjustment, I'd say, going from my daily life to Alaska and then back again. I know my dad said that I was discontented at first, and I think it was hard because in Alaska, everything was an adventure. And when I returned, my life felt so monotonous. I had this routine. And Alaska was tough, but it was also enormously rewarding. And there was, you know, there was always a new challenge or a new adventure. And when I returned to Alaska, I think Edna really helped me to, she was a huge inspiration to me because most of the time, it's men who are making forays into the wilderness and who you see off on these adventures. And Edna was just this amazing wilderness woman. And as my dad mentioned, she grew up on St. Lawrence Island. And her father didn't have any sons. So as the eldest daughter, she was her father's sidekick. And he taught her all the wilderness skills he knew. And then she passed those down to me.
I just have to ask, what did your friends and your teachers and the other folks in your regular life think of the fact that you were going off and living in a cabin for a month and learning, essentially to live this traditional native lifestyle? It must have been something they couldn't even conceive of.
Yeah, and I think that was a little bit of the problem when I came back because I had this transformative experience. And I really didn't know how to describe it. I didn't know how to share it because it wasn't something other people could comprehend without experiencing it for themselves. And so I think that's part of the reason I struggled. And I remember telling my cousin about that I was going back up, and I was kind of joking around with her, and I asked her, you know, you want to come to Alaska with me? And she answers over the phone. She goes, I don't want to die. I thought that no, that's not what it's about at all. But I think that I got many different reactions. That was one of them, probably the most extreme.
Yeah. Well, we all think that kids here think that you die if you go down south to the big city. So it's either way you go, it sounds scary. So what was the third trip? The third trip was more of a traditional backpacking trip, it sounds like. Hey, Jim?
Yeah, it was. We have, we have two friends in Alaska that joined us on the trip. Dave Musgrave, a friend from Fairbanks, and Chris Jones, a friend from Palmer, and they joined us on the trip. So that was great. But we backpacked over the Brooks Range and then paddled our folding canoe out to the Arctic Ocean, out to Airy Island on the Arctic Ocean. And we did it to kind of celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. So that was kind of the impetus for it. But was also, that was our kind of original conception of our Alaska trip. So after spending, you know, the summer building a cabin and the winter on a trap line, that was something, after we got home, we pretty much knew that we wanted to do. And, you know, that was absolutely incredible. You're in some of the wildest country in North America, and we saw, of course, grizzly bears and wolves and golden eagles and doll sheep and a muskox and polar bear. So I think that for me that was the fulfillment of everything I was kind of hoping to do.
Yeah, and it sounds like by that time Aiden was a pretty outdoorsy girl, and she handled it pretty easily. Or what were the challenges?
Well, I think there were a lot of challenges. First of all, the hula, depending upon when you're on it and what year it is, high water, low water, can be a pretty tough river. And we prepared for it a lot. I mean, we did a lot of paddling before we went up there. And but you know, when you're on a wilderness trip, you know, you prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And you know, wilderness trips never go entirely as you hope. So there was a kind of enormous sense of responsibility, you know, keeping Aiden safe on the backpacking trip and the river trip. But yeah, she, as I said, she'd already blossomed. So I knew that she was mentally and physically ready for the trip. She's an athlete, so I knew the physical part she was prepared for, and I thought that she would also be ready, you know, for the rigors of the trip, which she certainly was.
So tell me about your relationship with your daughter and how these trips affected that. I would think that you would have become really close after going through these experiences together.
Well, you know, we always had a good friendship and a good bond, and, you know, a lot has been written about the father-son bond, but not really the father-daughter bond. But I think that she learned, and perhaps I learned too, that sometimes the best relationships are kind of forged by adversity. Though we there were certainly moments when she disliked me, and certainly moments, as I said before, when she wished she would be anywhere else with anyone but me. But yeah, I think in the long run, it will be something we'll look back on with great fondness.
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing you answer the same question, Aiden. How did this affect the way you thought of your father and in the way you related to each other?
Well, I think, as my dad mentioned, when you're in an extreme environment like that, there are going to be times of adversity, but there are also wonderful bonding opportunities, too. And I think during the course of those three trips, my dad became my best friend. I mean, when I was up there, there weren't many choices, and there weren't many people to talk to. So I told him everything. And there were definitely some fun times too. I remember we used to have this ritual, and as a teenage girl, I saw that it was necessary for me to bring a small handheld mirror on every single one of my trips. So every night after we crawled into the tent, I'd bring out that mirror and I'd look at myself and I'd say, B+. And then I'd hand it over to my dad, and he'd look at himself, and he'd say, B-. And so you have these great little moments too, where you're together in something, and that was really special for me. And those are moments I'm going to hang on to for a long time, especially as I look to the future.
Yeah. Well, what does your future hold? I assume that you're going to continue to do some outdoor stuff, because it sounds like you've got it in your blood now.
Yeah, I got the bug. I want to continue these wilderness experiences and have some of my own adventures. And I think now I'm prepared for that, not just my confidence, but my wilderness skills too, thanks to Edna and my dad. I feel like I am independent enough to go off on my own and have some of these experiences. I'm thinking of next year taking a gap year and doing some traveling by myself too, and maybe I'll bring my dad around, you know, for old time's sake.
But you haven't figured out your exact itinerary, I guess.
Well, I'm hoping to spend some time in Spain, and then I would like to go down to Costa Rica, and I'm going to use my my river rafting skills, and I'd like to become a river guide on some of the rivers down there.
Oh, that's a great goal. How do you feel about that, Jim? Do you like the idea of that?
Oh, I completely encourage it. Nothing in the world could make me happier, and it makes me feel like all the Alaska trips were worth it, and that yes, in the end, despite the reservations and other people telling me that, you know, that it was a bad idea, that, you know, that I'd done the right thing.
Yeah. And then you got to sit down and write a book about it, which is about some events that are not that far in the past. So sort of interpreting all this out to the world.
Yeah. That was both joyful and painful. You know, it's tough to kind of put all those experiences and all that kind of reflection in try to capture that in a book. It was hard work, but yeah, it allowed me to relive a lot of those experiences and also make sense of some of them. And also to read, Aidan allowed me to read her diary so I could fill the book with some of those details, and also to get some understanding of what Aidan really thought of me at times.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always a flattering portrait. But, you know, that was probably necessary, too. I just want to say that when we were on the river, Aidan was our bowman, you know, in the canoe. And I would be in the back, and, you know, it was kind of her job to read the river, but I was still in control mode. So I would be shouting instructions to her from the stern of the canoe. And after the first or second day, she said, you know, Dad, this isn't working. You have to relinquish some control. So gradually I relinquished control, and she became, you know, kind of the reader of the river. And by the middle of the trip, she was barking orders at me. So it was kind of, for her, this wonderful role reversal, which was a real, you know, learning experience for me.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's great. And, you know, that's a topic that I don't know that I've ever read another book about, that you've really, of all the books that have been written about the outdoors, you've found a topic that has not been really dug into before, which is a relationship between a father and a daughter on a really challenging wilderness experience, and a good contribution. So, and I thank both of you for being with us today.
Yeah, it was wonderful. We appreciate it.
And thanks, Aidan. And back to class now.
All right. Oh, no.
Yeah. So James and Aidan Campbell have been with me. James has just written Braving It, the book about their Alaskan adventures. It's just come out from Random House Crown, and I'm sure you can find it in any bookstore. And that's all we've got for today's show on Outdoor Explorer. I want to thank my earlier guests, father-daughter teams, Lars and Zoe Danner, who did that amazing motorcycle ride all the way back to New York. And you can learn more about that from a column I wrote for Alaska Dispatch News about Zoe and her kind of amazing educational journey. You'll find that along with other links and information at outdoorexplorer.org. And also check out our Facebook page. Outdoor Explorer has a Facebook page, and that's how we get a lot of ideas, including finding out about Lars and Zoe, so I could interview them. We'd love to hear your ideas and suggestions. And of course, we heard from James Campbell, whose book is Braving It. So our producer is Eric Bork. Grace Bogene organizes our guests. My name is Charles Wolforth. The show is Outdoor Explorer, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.